I'm sorry, since you said it, I've been able to fixate on nothing but the idea that you make products that fall under the field title of danger management. Is that like
Yes.
lions are attacking? I mean, just like what is danger management?
Yeah, anything that can cause a life-threatening situation falls under danger management.
That's a lot less sexy than like lion attack.
It is, but it does take into consideration terrorist attacks. We're always looking for innovations, and they always take ideas for new things. I could try and float up an idea, working on a solution for, lion attacks.
It's not something that I worry about a lot, but it's that risk versus exposure thing. It may be a small risk, but if it happens, because nobody's prepared for it.
Right. And
What
I
happens
think,
when terrorists start using lions?
oh God, you've just compounded my nightmare.
So that's the real
Yeah.
problem.
Hey everybody, welcome to What Drives Us number 5 for the week of February 17th, 2010. I'm Russell Frost from the Prius Owners Group.
And I'm Danny Cooper from PriusChat.com.
And this week, we are very lucky to have back with us PriusChat.com moderator and all-around fun guy, Tony Schaefer. Hey, Tony.
Hey, I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you.
Absolutely. So here we go. We've got a lot of fun stuff to talk about this week. Some of the things we're going to touch on in this week's podcast, more unanswered questions on the Toyota recall. There are four governors who actually put together a statement that said no more Toyota bashing, Prius unintended acceleration, some news on the Nissan Leaf, and that and a little bit more this week. So I guess we should just get started because we've got a lot of ground to cover. First thing, from the Christian Science Monitor posted an interesting article outlined three big questions they felt were the questions that Toyota has not addressed in the recall or in any of their statements. Those questions are, just briefly without the discussion, will the Prius fix work? Is the problem limited to Priuses? And what did Toyota know and when did Toyota know it? I think it's pretty much, I guess I should go to the Prius chat group here. It seems like the fix has worked.
Yeah, I was just actually, there's a non-official poll that's been posted over on Prius Chat, kind of asking people who have had the fix done, who have had the ECU update done to their cars, what their experiences have been. And currently there's like, what, two, four, six, there's like seven different options that you can, the way that you can answer this poll. And right now, the question, or the option I've experienced and was able to duplicate the brake issue before the ECU update and still can, has zero respondents. So it seems like, if anyone would be able to get the brakes to do the same issue that we had before, it would be Prius chatters. And seeing
Agreed.
as how we haven't been able to do it, I would say that the software update fixed the perceived issue.
Yeah, I haven't seen any email or any feedback on my site, but you obviously have a much larger, much more active group. And I would think if something was going to pop up, if there was a problem, it would pop up there first. So, I mean, I think that question, I don't know, when I first read through this article, I was like, that just seems like a question hoping for the negative answer, is the problem limited to Priuses? Well, I mean, we knew that really before going into it, that it was really more connected to the hybrid powertrain in the new generation.
Right. And now we're hearing that the Lexus HS software is available sooner than they thought it would. So I think, what did we hear, Russell, that owners of HSs can start going to their dealerships?
I don't think they've officially contacted people yet, but yeah, I think that was just today or yesterday. I saw that.
Yeah, I think it was this morning.
Okay,
Yeah, it
this
certainly
morning.
didn't stop some of the Prius owners from going in. I remember the software update was announced at night. Well, in the middle of the afternoon, Japan time, it was night here in the United States, and the next morning, people were posting on Prius chat, hey, just came back from the dealer and got my ECU flashed.
Right.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I don't think that the Prius chat population has seen as a you know, an intrusive, very involved fix. You know, I think Prius chatters at least have understood that it's software and solely software, as right. opposed to the pedal break that, or the pedal fix that that other Toyota models are having to go through.
Right, a mechanical application as opposed to just updating the software.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it.
There we go. Right. And then the final question the Christian Science Monitor asks is, what did Toyota know and when did it know it? That's a big question. And I assume that they're speaking just in regard to the 2010 Prius. They kind of go on to elaborate a little bit in the following paragraphs and talk about why didn't Toyota announce a fix for the cars already in earlier. I think if we haven't articulated that here, I'm certainly pretty familiar with Toyota's stance on it, which is that it wasn't a major issue until it became a major issue.
Right, and also from what I understand, applying the software update on the production line is much different than creating a software update that can be sent out to dealerships. So you know, you've got all the documentation that has to go along with it. You've got to build the Windows file that executable that actually runs and updates the software. So it's a little bit more involved than just, okay, it's fixed on the production line, let's go ahead and send it to the dealerships, you know, 5 minutes later.
It's I don't know. I mean, I think they're kind of digging for something there that maybe doesn't exist.
Well, people have been talking about the problem for a long time on Prius chat, and it really started to reach a crescendo in December, I think it was. But you know, like probably since July, I've been seeing some stuff about it.
What conclusion do you draw from that?
Well, I don't know if there's a conclusion that can be drawn, but
just that's called getting tossed in a corner, my friend.
Going mm-hmm. back to what I was saying last week, you know, you and I got into that. I kind of went on a rant about companies' use of social media, and I think that this is again a situation where if they weren't, Toyota could have used information being posted to sites, social media sites like Prius chat, to find out what's going on with their cars and what real users are experiencing. Because, you know, whereas this ABS issue may not have been something that would have popped up during their normal safety testing procedures, it popped up fairly quickly in real world driving. So, and it wasn't until it reached X number of complaints in the NHTSA database that it really got some attention.
Right. And yeah, and we certainly dissected that whole process that Toyota ideally is going to fine tune that their receptors in some different areas rather than waiting for, you know, the NHTSA database to overboil and spill over into much larger consumer complaints.
And, you know, something like this, I remember when this was first being brought up on Prius chat, and people were talking about, you know, the brakes and the weird feel. And those of us who had our Gen 2s for many years would chime in and say, no, we've been feeling basically the same thing for years now. We know exactly what it is. Don't worry about it. And even other owners of the Gen 3 would say, well, I don't feel it. Therefore, there's nothing wrong with your car. I mean, this wasn't something that someone posted, you know, I don't know what it would be, you know, like, hey, did you guys notice this? And somebody runs out in their garage and they test it and they go, oh, yeah, I just confirmed it. Isn't that really neat? You know, and that's what we do a lot on Prius chat. And you can get people to confirm something, and now we know that it's how the car works. This was something that was, you know, I don't want to say non-confirmable, but the number of people who could not confirm it greatly outweighed the number of people who did confirm it, which was, you know, from a sort of troubleshooting and validation perspective is an interesting situation.
Well, and Tony, you bring up a good point that I think Russell and I mentioned it last week, that people who bought a 2010 Prius who also owned a second-gen Prius were, I don't know if they were overlooking this as being a quote-unquote issue, you know, more than it was, because I think a lot of us just kind of chalked it up to, well, it's a Prius. You know, that's the way it drives. And then we had first-time Prius owners who were really the ones that were shedding light on the issue. And because they were first-time Prius owners, they kind of got not shunned, but, you know, they were overridden, I guess is a way to put it, on the Prius chat forums, for example, when they would post about an issue. Because it'd be like, no, exactly what you said. And, you know, no, that's just, you know, part of how the Prius works. Enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And, wow. So which response is right, I wonder?
This one is Catch-22 right. Scenarios.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. Because I can see both responses and going, okay, well, it is part of the vehicle. And it isn't a safety issue. At least according to the vast majority of people that have dealt with it.
Yeah, I compared it to a friend just recently. With all the fanfare that Vista came out with, you know, look how quickly Microsoft basically dumped Vista and went to Windows 7. And I said, they did that. Why did they do that? And the person said, well, because a lot of people didn't like Vista. I was like, well, exactly. And a lot of people don't like the way the Prius is braking. So Toyota's jumped out and they fixed it. It wasn't a safety thing. It was a feedback from the population thing. It was an owner's group thing. And so they fixed it. It's the way it's programmed. It's the way the car works. In certain situations, this is going to happen. Like you said, Russell, it doesn't strike me as a huge safety thing because I have to assume I've been living with it for 5 years in my car because I know my car would do the same thing in the same situation. But what really gets me is when I'm reading some of these articles, and this one in particular, and I think it was in the Christian Science Monitor, where there was a quote from someone that said, "I was braking, my car surged forward."
Right. Oh God.
And it didn't come to a stop until I hit another car head on. And I'm thinking, what part of a brake failure surge throws you into another lane? Somewhere, someone had to have touched the steering wheel. Now, maybe I'm being cold and callous here, but something just strikes me as odd in that quote.
You and I, the three of us here, we can be a lot more cold and callous about something like that. That's obviously there's some issues with that complaint. But Toyota can't do that, and NHTSA can't do that. They have to take every complaint as though it were absolutely well-documented and absolutely factual. And I think that's also part of the problem. And I'm going to get into that. I'm going to jump to the next topic if we can, because I want to get into that topic after this. Any final follow-ups on that one?
Not yet.
Okay.
But I reserve the right to come back.
you're right.
Still under oath.
There we go. Thank you, Perry Mason. So Fox News, not necessarily one of my favorite sources, but nonetheless, I thought this was very intriguing, reported, in fact, earlier, late last week, that four governors, Kentucky's governor, Indiana's governor, Mississippi, and Alabama, got together to make a statement that supported Toyota, that said, you know, enough of the Toyota bashing. And the obvious reason for that is...
Dun, dun, dun.
Panel, there are Toyota plants in those states.
Mm-hmm. The judge would have also accepted jobs.
Jobs. And which goes to another thing that we actually didn't officially list on our itinerary, but obviously Toyota's already shut down temporarily San Antonio. And I believe one other plant.
Kentucky.
Was it Kentucky? The Georgetown? The Camry plant? Georgetown?
I think it was Georgetown. I'll double check.
We can look at that. But I mean, scaling back production to meet the scaled back demand, mm-hmm. that Toyota's facing in, you know, in dealing with this media onslaught that suddenly every Toyota ever made has serious problems. And this week, in fact, we're starting to hear more. NHTSA's kind of reared up on its hind legs again and said that they want explanations on, and I don't have that particular number in front of me, but I want to say a reported 34 deaths. Now, if I'm not mistaken, that 34 deaths goes back 10 years and covers the entire Toyota line. That's a pretty big reach to be slapping Toyota with. I don't know. You know, the more I think about it, the more I think something's really going on at NHTSA, and I hate to sound like the tinfoil hat wearing guy. But
well, you know what, Russell, though? I know what you're going to say, and it's not even that tinfoil hat wearing. Go ahead and say what you're going to say, and I'll...
I don't understand, you know, like, I've never in my life do I recall a Secretary of Transportation getting up on television and saying, oh, no, I'd garage the thing right now and wouldn't drive it. I mean, you know, maybe an underling, and yeah, he'd jump back from it right away, but honestly, like, what goes through your head as a cabinet official to say something like that? And now we have, that a few of the Congress critters want to jump up and down and, you know, talk about investigations or panels or something. That I get. That's just what they do. It just seems like NHTSA's really involved in trying to really bring Toyota to a standard that isn't even realistic, and certainly not a standard that any other car manufacturer's ever been held to.
Well, you and I were talking about it after the podcast last week and kind of talking about how we found it funny that people are starting these conspiracy theories that the government's doing it because of their investment in GM, etc. And, you know, we were kind of laughing about it. But I had like four or five people over the weekend mention the exact same thing to me. And these are people that I actually, you know, I agree with most of what they say, and I respect what they have to say. And it's like, okay, if these people are actually thinking that, then maybe there's actually some potential validity to it.
Yeah, I've had people ask me at work, because, you know, they know I drive my Prius, and I'm active in Prius, and they ask me stuff, you know, especially with the pedals, and I explain the two different manufacturers and two types of pedals, and they say, well, what if... You know, Toyota determines, you know, the pedal was a problem and it was the American-made pedal. And what I said, well, if push comes to shove, they just stop buying from the American manufacturer. Done. You know?
It's funny about it, Tony, though, is that the CTS pedal is the one with the problem, which is the U.S.-manufactured pedal. And they went back to CTS to have them make the new pedal. And, you know, why hasn't CTS fallen on a sword at all for Toyota and all this? I haven't heard them mentioned at all in any of the articles.
Well, two words, American jobs. No one's going to, I mean, how popular is anybody accusing an American company of doing something wrong like that going to be right now? Nobody in the government's going to do that.
Well, I'd like to see how many jobs CTS creates versus the number that Toyota creates.
No argument there at all.
Yeah.
I mean, without getting, we're sort of segueing into the next topic, and I guess that's, I just thought it was interesting that these governors got together and, from a very self-interested point of view, said, hey, quit picking on Toyota.
Well, one quick note about it, I did notice, I think I read in one of the articles about this, that I think there were two governors who had plants in their states who didn't. There are actually three, I guess. Yeah, West Virginia, Alabama, and Texas. Were three states where the governors did not come out and say anything. So that's an interesting little subnote.
Yeah. No, I guess the final thing on this Fox thing, and what a surprise, it is Fox News and not known for their exceptionally detailed factual reporting. Fox actually, a few paragraphs into this thing, and let me read this. The recalls led U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood last week to advise in a congressional testimony that anybody, in quotes, who owns one of these vehicles in question should, in quotes, stop driving it, end quote, and take it to a dealership.
Yeah.
I mean, that's LaHood backed off. He said no, just just that out there, you know.
Did you see Twitter explode when that happened, by the way?
I did not, actually.
I was watching Twitter that day. And, you know, Twitter's fun to watch just for breaking news stories.
Absolutely.
To see what people are chatting about. And, boy, Twitter exploded. And the Toyota PR Twitter account, they were just posting every 5 minutes updates. You know, we just spoke blah, 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 and he meant to say this, and he's retracted his story, blah, blah, blah.
This is a perfect example. Once somebody, especially at that level, says something like this, it's in the news stream, and it'll never come out.
Yep.
It's in the news stream. It's on tape.
Yeah. Yeah. No one's going to remember the retraction. They're only going to remember that he said it.
Well, right. You know, and to that point, I think this exact topic was posted on Priya's chat. And, you know, people were saying, well, he retracted it, you know, so, but to that point, you know, how many people still talk about the dust-to-dust report, even after that was retracted? How many people still bring up the mine in Sudbury, Canada, even after Sudbury, you know, came out and said that's just a pack of lies?
The Hummer more efficient than the Prius.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. And so you're right, Russell. I mean, it's out there. And, you know, the redaction always comes on page 5, mm-hmm. but the initial hit is always, you know, 2-inch font on the front page.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, that's, you know, we've seen this with a lot of things, and I don't know. Maybe it's the first time in recently that we've seen this happen with a product, with a company. Maybe since the Tylenol thing back in the, that was like back in the 70s, early 80s, before you guys were born. A long time ago. Tylenol is this pain reliever. Have you ever seen Tylenol?
But, you know, to that point, you know, Tylenol, at the time, Tylenol simply pulled all the bottles off the shelves. I don't believe that they were demonized, at least not as much as I think Excedrin got hit after that. There was a copycat poison. But yeah, I mean, at least when that came out, you know, there were other things on the shelves, and Tylenol was able to cut their losses and pull all the bottles and repackage. But to tell people to stop driving their cars, I mean, we've done everything we can as Americans to turn ourselves into a vehicular-centered society. When you tell someone they can't drive their vehicle, that's a punch in the gut.
Huge. Huge.
Well, and if we can go back to the Christian Science Monitor article real quick.
Oh, now you're bringing that back up.
Yeah, this was the first place where I had seen any numbers on what the software update did. And according to the Christian Science Monitor article, the skid control system, the ABS system, delays, according to them, delayed the braking system for 0.46 seconds. Now, the software update then reduced the time of that delay to 0.4 seconds. The time, and the 0.4 seconds is the same delay that's on the previous generation Prius and the first generation Prius. So after all this, we're talking about, you know, 0.06 of a second. But it's really amazing that that small amount of time has created such a big problem for Toyota. And, you know, the Prius thing probably wouldn't have been a big deal if it hadn't been, you know, following the accelerator pedal issue. Mm. But, boy, the Prius recall really made the accelerator pedal issue look even more monumental. You know, the fact that it just kept building and building, and now they're talking about Corolla steering problems.
Right. So.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the next item on our agenda for this evening. San Francisco, San Francisco Chronicle article from last Friday. And this is just the one article I grabbed. There's several different stories like this out there now in the stream floating around. But basically details a woman who is filing suit against Toyota in L.A. court. Her husband was killed in a Prius accident, and she's claiming that the Prius, and I'm going to quote the article here, Let's see. Donahue, a 67-year-old nurse, claims her 2006 Toyota Prius suddenly accelerated and went out of control in 2009, slamming into another vehicle, killing her husband and injuring her. Unquote. Now we're hearing about unintended acceleration in Priuses.
I'm going to be a total ageist right now and alienate a good portion of our listening audience. Go for it.
I'm going to agree with you.
There's a theme amongst these articles and amongst these unintended acceleration issues, and it's the 65 and over population.
Dude, you totally just alienated half the population, and he is pissed.
Hey, I am not there, thank you.
At least Evan Fusco is still listening.
Yeah.
Right. There's one listener.
No, I mean, I agree. And this, you know, is just, again, not to recap previous podcasts, but when I read this article, all I hear is Audi 5000. Because it's the same exact, suddenly now we're going to have a spate of death claims on unintended acceleration. And, you know, let's start counting these and how many of them are 65 or older drivers.
Well, and the Prius is very popular amongst the 65 and up crowd. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a great car for that age group to have, but it's a great car to have if they understand the technology that they're sitting in. And right. I'm not saying that this issue in Nebraska, you know, is not an issue with the car, but the signs for me all point to people not understanding the electronics of the car, and maybe they're accidentally bumping the cruise control stalk. I don't know what they're doing, but there's certainly a theme there.
Could it be reaction time? You know,
could it be simply a matter of someone who drives with 2 feet, 1 foot on each pedal, and forgets which pedal is underneath which foot? I mean, honestly, I've seen people, maybe it's just because I've lived in Southern California and Florida, the two areas that have huge amounts of retired folks, but I can't tell you how many people I've seen driving down the highway, down the streets with their brakes on. You know, and that indicates, and it's a common thing, got a foot on each pedal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know which one I'm pressing harder, but I'm going forward, so everything's okay.
Every time I go to Florida, I see that quite a bit.
Here's the thing. If somebody can come up with a plausible reason why this is happening, if some kind of something other than my car just suddenly accelerated, I'm going to buy into it and I'm going to chase it down with a blowtorch. But
could it be a combination of a steady decrease in speed, rough terrain, and the left turn signal?
I don't mean to have fun at this. You know, I'm definitely, it's tragic. This woman lost her husband, and that's horrible. I want to find a way to understand this, that there's some evidence, that there's even a theory. I mean, you know, in the article, and let me quote again from the Chronicle thing, her attorney, Robert Nelson, says the Prius is not equipped with a safety feature that can override the electronic throttle, unquote. I don't even know what that means. That's like gibberish.
That is total gibberish.
What? Who?
Don't all cars have electronic throttles these days?
I don't know, but what does he want? Like an enormous, like one of those U-bar switches that, you know, shuts the card off?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people have been floating that idea, and the second somebody inadvertently punches that and shuts the car down on the Santa Monica Freeway, that's going to get recalled.
Right. It doesn't...
Well, now, there was also discussion of Toyota reprogramming the start button, the power button, on all their cars that have remote SKS. And I actually, the idea is that right now in the Prius and other Toyota smart key cars, you have to press and hold down the power button for, I think it's 3 seconds while the car is in motion if you want it to turn off. And the idea is, apparently, just what other manufacturers do is they have it so if you press it 3 times in a row, it'll shut off. And I agree with that, because a freaked out person is going to just, you know, start tapping the crap out of their power mm-hmm. button when their car to shut off, and not thinking, okay, hold it, 1, 2, 3, okay, now I can let go.
Yeah, that's I mean, 3 seconds is what is that? That's like
that's a lifetime.
Six. Yeah, that's 6 anti-lock brake engagements, disengagements.
Yeah.
0.461, 0.462, 0.463, 0.64.
I just don't. Okay, so let me be a little more objective here. Again, you guys see thousands of Prius owners. What's your take on sudden unintended acceleration?
I hate to tell someone that they are full of crap. Yeah, I always want to assume that people are honest and they're telling the truth and they're not going to make this stuff up. I have yet to see anything like truly compelling. Anyone who I trust as a veteran driver, I've yet to have anybody come up and say, I truly believe that my car does unintended acceleration. So
I agree with that, Tony. It's like, I saw this today. Somebody who bought their Prius a couple months ago has been having issues with the navigation system. And they said, you know, when I had a Honda, the navigation system would always take me the way I wanted it to. And in the Prius, it takes me out of the way. I know a more direct route, et cetera, et cetera. Well, don't get me started on why you're using navigation when you're going someplace you know how to get to. But anyway, what it was more than anything was education on how to use the settings of the navigation system. You know, there are settings to avoid toll roads and, you know, prefer mm-hmm. interstates instead of urban roads and things like that. And so, you know, I think a lot of it just comes down to education. You know, people come on and they post on Prius Chat about all kinds of questions, and that's what Prius Chat is there for, and that's what the Prius Chat members are there for, is to help each other answer those questions. But I think a lot of it just comes down to education.
Yeah, I mean, we on Prius Chat, the senior members have been there for years and years. The RTF and M keys are worn out.
Right. Read the manual.
Yeah, the F is silent. Uh-huh.
It stands for frost.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah.
And I mean, and a lot of it is true. And, you know, I posted a very short rant myself about how people will tell you that they bought the Prius because of the advanced technology. They'll praise the Prius for the advanced technology. They'll boast about the advanced technology. They'll put between $25,000 and $32,000 down for a car just because of the advanced technology, and they'll never read the manual. Like, what part of this is supposed to make sense? This is not a 1973 Oldsmobile. This is a car that's advanced technology, partial zero emissions vehicle. It's a hybrid powertrain. It's, you know, almost everything by wire. Why do people think that they can just skip the manual, hop in it, and expect it to feel like every other car they've ever driven? And it's not, you know, and I'm just going to do one more thing, and it's not just the Prius, because I'm very Prius-centric, but we're going to see more and more hybrids and more technology, and this is going to become epidemic.
100% agree. 100% agree.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I think that the ABS software update has got to be one of the coolest updates I've ever seen as far as a safety recall goes, because it was literally, like I said last week, if Toyota could have sent it out to the users on a USB stick and the Prius had a USB port, you could have just plugged it in and updated it yourself. And that is the future of cars.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, totally cool. I was talking with the technician when we were doing this, and I said, you know, to me, this is really exciting. This is the kind of exciting thing about advanced technology vehicles that I really like, because, I mean, look at the possibilities for Toyota. I mean, they could potentially have a racing software package that you could buy for $50 and you could plug that USB stick into your car and it would change the timing and all these other aspects of the vehicle that are controlled by computers now.
Or the, was it the ODB2? What's it called?
Yeah, the ODB2.
Easy for me to say.
It's ODB or OBD, I don't know, but it's OBD2, I think.
It's the OMG port.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if they came out with a dongle that you could plug into that, that, you know, when the car detects something plugged in, it gets a new license. It reads the license off of it and activates, you know, different routines or subroutines, or, you know, installs software on it or something. I mean,
yeah, I mean, that would basically be cool. Our car is becoming just another piece of consumer electronics that it's up to the user to update it from time to time. And there's surely going to be mechanisms in the future using the what's the Toyota OnStar system called?
SOS?
Yeah, the SOS system could somehow alert the user that there's a software update available, and, you know, whether or not they choose to install that software update or not, you know, fine.
I don't think you're supposed to call it the Toyota OnStar.
Someone just grabbed at their side. Wow.
The Toyota Twitter page just went wild.
Yeah. Trademark pending.
Trademark. I mean, to me, this does bode for an exciting future for cars, because, again, you know, it used to be a matter you had to go out and you had to buy cams and carburetors and suspension, and you had to physically put all these things on your vehicle, and, you know, it was dirty and nasty and expensive, whereas now you can make significant changes in the way the vehicle handles and drives and reacts just by updating the software, the best example of which is in the Gen 3 Prius and the 2010 Prius, the three buttons. You know, you've got an EV button, an eco mode, and a power mode, in addition to the standard mode, which is sort of the default of the vehicle. You know, right there, you can control how that car reacts in a number of different ways to, you know, increase your MPG, increase your driving performance, whatever it is you intend. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I've really enjoyed that in my Gen 3. I don't use the power mode very often, but
poor guy.
Getting through I'm not a fun driver. You know, getting out through intersections, stuff like that, it's fantastic to be able to control the throttle response based on your needs at that moment.
Can I tell you, I've used Echo mode for the last 2 days more than the total number of times and amount of time I've used Echo mode in almost the first year that I've owned the car. I mean, it's cool, but I'm a standard mode, power mode driver. That's me.
And you and I should do something where we switch for a week. I drive power all the time. You drive Echo all the time.
Oh, my. It would be interesting, actually. I was going to say, what it does to your MPG, though, would kill you. You'd cry at the end of the day. You know, it's not good for your MPG. But it's a lot more fun. I mean, I think that's cool, and that's sort of an under talked about feature of the Gen 3. It's awesome.
That's fine. Well, they dedicated almost an entire chapter in the manual to it.
If I'd read it, I'd know that. But
well, Russell, speaking of being a fellow Gen 3 owner, how are you feeling about your resale value right now?
You know, one of the things I've always loved about my Prius is the feeling that at any time I could take that thing in and trade it in and or sell it in a private party and do really, really well. And I did very well on my Gen 2. Kelly Blue Book and the news media is killing me. I mean, they're just killing us. They're killing all of us.
Well, tell us a little bit about Kelly Blue Book.
Kelly Blue Book, founded in 19...
Yeah. Well, for those of you not aware of what Kelley Blue Book is, Kelley Blue Book is the Bible of the used car valuation industry. You know, time was it was a cute little blue brown bound book. It is now mostly electronic, and it's what car dealers use to value a used vehicle based on a number of criteria. Kelley puts a price in there, and that is not. I don't want to say it is really what everyone uses. So if Kelley devalues a car by $1,000, you can pretty much make it for certain that every dealer in the United States has as well. It has a significant impact.
You know, I'm holding firm. Well, in the first place, you know, I don't buy cars based on what I'm going to be able to resell them for. But you know, I've got a 2004. I think it's going to hold me 2 or 3 more years at least. And as far as I'm concerned, the resale value of my car is just another gas spike away.
Certainly the other thing is that, you know, gas kind of floating back down a little bit of late, and with all the problems Toyota's had in the media, you know, that it hurt. These resale values really fluctuate. It's not a blue chip commodity that depreciates by X number of percent every year.
Yeah, and so KBB came out and said that they're going to, you know, drop the blue book value of the 2010 Prius by about $1,000 to $1,500. My question is how do normal incentive programs with other manufacturers affect Kelley Blue Book prices? Because the Prius has only had incentives. You know, really, the 09 had incentives to get them off the lots for the 10s. And even with the issues that Toyota's been having, from what I'm hearing, they're still not talking about any incentives, cash incentives for the Prius.
No, I've just heard here in Chicagoland, you know, all I've heard is, you know, maybe dealers will offer, you know, low financing or no money down or something, but no direct Prius incentives.
Yeah, so hopefully, maybe this $1,000 to $1,500 is similar to a drop that another model would see with incentives put on them. But I don't know. And, you know, maybe it'll come May or June when gas is back up to $325 or whatever it's going to get to this summer. Things will pick back up.
So looking at Kelley Blue Book just as, you know, Kelley Blue Book, I have to assume that they are constantly adjusting and fluctuating car prices. So why the press conference news release on this one?
Because it would get them ink.
It's, yeah, and it's more, I mean, it's the hot topic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's really the issue is, you know, again, it's... Nobody kicks someone when they're down more than the media. And Toyota's definitely down right now. So it's going to be really popular. Anytime someone says anything that they can take a shot at Toyota, it's going to happen. And I think this Kelley Blue Book thing, again, most of the time wouldn't even make the news. You know, when the Prius was enjoying incredible resale values, it was mentioned, but it wasn't a news story. You know, and here I've got a thing from the Chicago Tribune. You know, a whole story on the Kelley Blue Book and how it's affected Toyota resale values.
It's just following the chasing the hot story. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, now, there won't be any of these stories.
So is that woman with 20 children pregnant again yet? I'm just dying for the media to get a hold of something.
Do you know something we don't, Tony? Would you like to, you know, make an announcement?
No. Oh, yeah. In fact, last season of Lost, I think that the media should be all over that.
There was one little tidbit from the Chicago Tribune thing that I wanted to read to you guys, if I may. Again, quoting from the Chicago Tribune thing, it says, some Toyota owners are riding out the recall storm. Wayne Mitchell, who lives on the southwest side and owns a 2010 Prius, said, recalls are the popular thing to do right now. He has felt the braking sensation people have complained about in the Prius, he said, and as someone who also owned a 2005 Prius, he said it is just a normal sensation that comes with owning a hybrid. I'm not going to worry about it, Mitchell said.
Way to go, Wayne. There's-
Yay, Wayne. That is Wayne of the Chicago Prius Group at chicagopriusgroupnospaces.com.
And he's fire engineer over on Prius Chat. Most of you will probably know by that. He's the ETH guy.
Yeah, one of the things a lot of people don't understand, you know, when Wayne says, well, that's just part of driving a hybrid, you know, that people might just write it off and say, yeah, whatever. Most people don't realize that the Ford Fusion Hybrid was recalled for gas.
The exact same issue. Yeah.
The braking. Exactly. And, you know, the Ford Fusion Hybrid is second only to my Prius, is my favorite hybrid currently in production. And, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about either car, but they were both recalled for the exact same issue. And I don't see even boo about the Ford recall.
Yeah. Can you say shared technology?
Right. Exactly. Well, and the difference there being one's Ford, one's Toyota.
Well, you want to move on to another manufacturer that's getting good publicity lately?
Why not? Take us there.
This might be my third favorite car.
Yeah, well, the Nissan Leaf has been getting a lot of publicity the last week or so, which is good for EV fans, good for hybrid fans. The Nissan Leaf, as Russell and I touched on last week, is a 100-mile range electric vehicle that Nissan is going to be coming out with, and supposedly targeting the price at like the bottom end of the Prius. So like
26 to 33
was what in fact Wired reported today.
Oh, cool.
And that is the sale price, not including any you know, tax incentives or rebates or anything.
No GM math there. Is that what you're saying? No minus $7,000 right at the top?
You know, I was trying to be positive and uplifting, and you had to take it there. But, yeah, that's what I meant.
It's what I do, Tony. It's
Yeah, so that Wired article talks about how Hertz, who has recently taken all their Priuses off of their rental lots, is going to be offering the Leaf as into his rental fleet, both in Europe and in the United States, starting next year. So that's,
I find that very interesting.
That is really good news. I'm guessing that it's got to be whatever Hertz's Zipcar style wing. They're going to be the ones getting this. I can't imagine them, you know, you can pick it up at the airport.
I can tell you that when I'm traveling for business and I'm parking my car wherever I can find a spot at the Holiday Inn, I doubt there's going to be a 220 outlet that they're going to let me plug my car into.
You don't think so at a Holiday Inn?
Holiday Inn Express, maybe.
Oh, yeah,
I'm talking the conference centers.
Yeah. Well, and that's the interesting thing. I mean, I think it was cool that Hertz jumped on the bandwagon. Yeah, you know, Hertz is green. And they want, you know, they're talking about buying some Leafs. But how practical is it as a rental?
It's not, except for a Zipcar style. Right. Rental,
right? That small hourly rental, urban use kind of thing. Then that's fine. You know, assuming that you know at those Zipcar places, I think they call them pods or something. But you know, wherever the cars are parked, they probably have charging stations, or they could put charging stations there.
Here comes the infrastructure,
which is great. But you know, as it stands right now, I'm not. I mean, I think that maybe Hertz is grabbing a little more halo than real impact with that announcement, you know?
Yeah, and it could just be them. Like, Hertz has a big partnership with Nissan as far as using a lot of their cars in their rental fleets, so maybe it's a partnership announcement more than they're actually planning on hardcore following up on it.
But it's good. I was surprised even my wife said, you know, that's a really cute little car.
Yeah, I don't care what anyone says. I think that is a sharp-looking car. I really do.
I agree.
Just last week, Russell, you were talking about the lack of design.
It's kind of dorky, but it's cute. And it, you know what? I'm definitely an EV-inclined person. You know, and if I had Evan's money, I'd probably have a Model S deposit down.
You know? Well, he mentioned on Facebook that he's talking about dropping his, or not dropping, but putting down a deposit for a Leaf just in case the Tesla thing falls through.
Well, it does. If I had to bet on which car would see the market at all or first, I'd probably bet on Nissan. I mean, obviously, they may beat Tesla just because they're, you know, they've been working on it longer, but the Tesla's still a concept vehicle.
Well, and there's name recognition, I think.
With Nissan?
Yeah. You have the Altima, Sentra, you know, the entire Nissan line. You have the repeat customers who would feel more comfortable buying an all-electric vehicle from a company they've already purchased from before.
Well, yeah. Nissan also got another piece of excellent news for them. I guess it was late last month it was announced that they got a big $1.4 billion loan to retrofit their Smyrna, Tennessee plant to be able to build the Leaf there. So not only is the Leaf going to be an EV car, but it's also going to be a U.S.-produced EV, which supposedly the Smyrna facility can produce like 150,000 cars a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be doing the lithium-ion batteries there as well, so they won't see that log jam that Toyota always sees during the summer where they can't get enough batteries to put into their Priuses to get them out the door.
That's why they're taking over Argentina or something, wasn't it? Didn't we talk about that last week? Or
yeah, they've
taking over some South American country? No.
That's where Mr. Toyota is. He's down running a coup.
Down running a coup in a banana republic.
He is quote-unquote hiking the Appalachian Trail.
Ooh.
My great governor.
The implications of that are far and wide.
I knew at least one of us would catch that reference.
Oh, yeah. Kudos to Nissan for doing this. I mean, at least as far as the American market goes, they couldn't be doing this any better. It's coming out at a reasonable price. They're going to produce it here in the United States, and it's coming out relatively soon. It could very easily beat the Volt.
Very easily.
No. Oh, well, okay. Okay.
So, you know, I mean, Nissan's really like, you know, again, I think I said this last week. I mean, they're kind of like, you know, they've been off stage in this whole hybrid advanced technology thing. And all of a sudden now they're going to jump up into a very, very prominent place.
Mm-hmm. And this is a Department of Energy program, loan program. And so Nissan is actually the first, if you want to call it foreign manufacturer, to get one of these loans. Ford got like $6 billion. Tesla got close to $500 million. And so Nissan being able to pull $1.4 billion to retrofit their current plant is pretty cool that, you know, that the, I don't want to call it the Obama administration because I doubt President Obama is the one signing the check, but, you know, that our own Department of Energy is looking outside of home-based manufacturers.
Well, say what's on your mind. If the Obama family is like the typical family, Michelle's the one writing the checks. Come on, just throw it out there.
I was just thinking how cool it would be if Obama did sign the check. You know, like, keep the check. I mean, come on.
But I'd like to think that the check is auto-drafted from Bank of America.
And more. I mean, again, and not to keep bringing this home, but I mean, I think it's hugely important is that, again, they're doing this in the U.S. I mean, this is going to be American jobs. It's going to be a Nissan car, but, you know, it's a Nissan vehicle, and it's certainly a Japanese company, but that didn't stop the DOE from going, okay, well, they're going to build it here. What's the difference on it being U.S.? You know what I mean? That sort of mindset that a lot of people have. Ford's an American company. Toyota is a foreign company. Well, Ford produces what cars in Mexico? And Toyota produces how many cars here?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, something else that this will open up also is the U.S. government has said that they want to use like X number of EVs in their fleets by year or whatever. But those EVs or those plug-in / EVs have to be American produced. So now all of a sudden the Nissan Leaf falls into that, into those requirements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not only will Hertz start picking them up, but maybe we'll start seeing them in some government fleets. It's just like when the Prius showed up in the Coca-Cola fleets. That's when you know that they're taking off.
Yeah. Or as a cab, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should talk about one of my favorite guys in the car industry, Maximum Bob Lutz.
Why is he your favorite, Russell?
Because if there's a bigger buffoon in the car industry, what was his name? DeLorean's first name. The guy with the cocaine all over the lapels of his jacket.
John.
Thank you. The guy who used blow to finance his car company.
Do you mind me sharing the note that you included with this article when you sent around the outline?
Oh, please, go ahead.
The title that Russell gave this article was Bob Lutz Coughs Up More Stupidity.
And this to me is so emblematic of General Motors and the Volt. In that,
what did Bob do?
Bob was Maximum Bob, the 12-cylinder Cadillac, the guy who rides the Harley on stage and booms the engine and everybody cheers, you know, the testosterone-fueled former jet pilot who was going to lead General Motors until they went under. And as soon as they got government money, boom, who comes back but Bob? And who's leading the Volt program? Bob. Mr. 12-cylinder Cadillac.
Buddy.
I can't think of anything more ridiculous and more just, again, emblematic of GM's continual desire to fail as badly as possible.
This is the man who put all of his chips on the Hummer card.
Absolutely. And we all know how well that worked out. That was a good investment for them.
Anyway, so what's this article about that you want to...
The article at from taintedgreen.com basically, and I'm looking here for the exact quote. Let's see. Lutz later said, for the next 10 years or so, that's the way I see it. He was basically saying that he didn't see hybrids or EVs ever being over 10% of the car market.
Yeah.
For the next 10 years. Now, let's go back a few years. This is the guy who said the Prius would never be popular. It would never be a mainstream vehicle. It would always be a niche vehicle.
He also said, and I throw this article out as often as I can because it's one of my favorites. I have, Lutz quoted in January of 2004 of saying that hybrids make no sense. There's no financial gain. It's a losing proposition. And, when gas is only at that time $1.50 a gallon, it doesn't make any sense. And that's when we started seeing more Hummers and large GM vehicles being produced.
GM has never been able to make a hybrid. Never been able to make a successful hybrid. All their hybrids have sucked.
Well, when you put your hybrid system on how much does the Denali weigh? what's essentially a cruise ship?
It's this two-mode crap that doesn't work. And they put it on in these ridiculous cars where the V6 version of the Malibu got better gas mileage than the hybrid version.
And the Malibu is the mule for the Volt?
Actually, I think the Cobalt ended up being the...
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Ooh, even better.
Bob's also the one that gave us the new improved fuel efficiency math.
Yes. That is Bob's special little math. That is
Bob's special little math. If you have a vehicle that averages 10 miles per gallon, you save more fuel getting that vehicle up to 12 miles per gallon. Than if you take a mid-size 30 mile per gallon and take it up to 35 miles per gallon. Therefore, GM is going to focus all their effort on getting 2 more miles per gallon out of all their gas guzzlers.
It's all about percentages, Tony.
It's all about, and that's, you know, again, it's just more bad Lutz math. I mean, how many times do you see people talk about the price of the Volt as being $40,000? Because GM's fed the line that their $48,000, $47,000 car is really $40,000 because it'll probably apply for $7,000 in tax credits, assuming they're still there, assuming they exist in the year that the Volt comes out.
Well, and what happens when all the Democrats lose in the midterm elections and the Republicans come in and totally you know, undo all of the stimulus money, and so all those tax credits are gone, and all of a sudden GM is sitting on a $50,000 piece of metal.
Well, that's the supercar, the freedom car of the Bill Clinton, Al Gore era. You know, I challenge anyone to Google supercar, and you'll read about how Al Gore and Bill Clinton, well, I should say Bill Clinton and Al Gore, since he was the president and the vice president, made the three domestic manufacturers develop hybrids. And right before they left office, all three manufacturers unveiled hybrids that were getting 70 and 80 miles per gallon. And then we got a oil baron president. And sure enough, you never saw those hybrids again. So that's exactly what's going to happen. As soon as these incentives, as soon as CAFE standards, as soon as all this goes away, we might see that same thing happening again.
Well, here's my question on the Volt, and I'm sure that eventually we'll have an entire episode devoted to the Volt, and I hope that we'll have someone that has a different opinion than I do about it. But after the Prius had a... what was it, $3,000 tax credit, $3,150 tax credit on it for the first, in 2006, I know when I bought my car.
In 2004, it was only a $2,500 rebate or something.
Yeah, I think when I bought mine in 2005, it was $3,000. It wasn't a credit. It was a deduction.
Yeah, it was a deduction, which means you actually only saw a percentage of that.
Exactly. And then
I scored compared to you guys.
You did really well. Totally. Yeah, and then the state of Pennsylvania gave me $500.
But if you had bought a Hummer that same year, you could have written off up to $100,000.
That's right. Well, you know, my question is...
which is two tanks of gas, right? In the Hummer.
In the Hummer.
$3,000 was a significant amount of money that enabled me to buy my Prius at the time. And while there wasn't any... tax assistance available for when I bought my 2010, I was, you know, a different part of my life. I was, you know, prepared to buy a new Prius for that X dollars, etc. What happens when, and I haven't paid attention to what the regulations are on how long the $7,500 tax credit goes for and everything, but what happens when GM has a $50,000 Volt that they're having to sell and they can no longer say, you know, you pay $50,000 now, but you'll get $7,500 come April 15th. What happens to their buying base when they no longer have any sort of government assistance to sell them?
For the Volt?
Yeah.
What small, tiny, imaginary base they have right now, eagerly awaiting that car, disappears completely. I mean... you know, you're talking about 50,000.
Russell, they have 50,000 people who have signed up for information about the Volt.
You know, there's a thing in sales called qualifying your customer.
I don't think they took credit card numbers when they asked
some of them. Or did credit checks, I'm going to guess. I think it goes away. And
are they hedging their bets that they can reduce the cost of the hybrid system and therefore, or the PHEV system and therefore, you know, reduce the cost of the Volt? At which point they're totally screwing their previous Volt buyers?
Or at a truly cynical approach, are they going to produce these, wait until no one buys them, or at least there's very little purchase? And then a year or a year and a half later, we're going to hear that, well, GM did everything they could to produce this car, and, well, clearly the American public doesn't want it.
Well, I'm pretty sure the three of us see that coming.
Yeah, but now it's recorded. So now in 2012, on December 20th, 2012, the day before the world ends, I'm going to be able to say, I said that, and you can look it up.
Comforting.
Yeah.
Sort of. I'll be honest with you, and here's what frustrates me about GM. Because I know there are smart people there, and I know that the people who build those cars probably work really hard for their money, and they deserve jobs. They deserve to, you know, stay employed. But honestly, the management of GM has proven itself outrageously incompetent for so long. It's not just one CEO. It's a lot of people. There's a lot of people on that tower in Detroit that shouldn't be in the business at all. And I think I think they've found something. They've got, okay, we've got a Volt, and we're going to make a Volt, and it's going to be a great car. And I don't think the pragmatics of this car affect them whatsoever. They're just charging ahead with this Volt.
Well,
I think.
No, go ahead, Tony.
I was going to say, honestly, going back, 3 years, I don't think they ever actually intended to make this vehicle. If you remember, the Volt came out of the concept that was unveiled at a car show. What was it, like 3 years ago? It was that power looking Volt.
Right.
And you know, Lutz talked it up and said, well, this is something that we're looking into, and it's going to cost less than $20,000, and you're going to drive 150 miles on battery, and
then
it's going
we found
to plug
out they
in,
never put it into a wind tunnel even.
Yeah, and then
it did better in a wind tunnel backwards.
Backwards. Lutz himself said it would have done better backwards. I don't think they ever planned on manufacturing this car, but they did such a good job marketing that concept and telling a good story that the American public rose up and said, you build it and we'll buy it. But now they might be finding out that building it is a little harder than they anticipated.
Well, let's go around. We all have kind of different needs in our lives for what we need from a car. Russell, for you, would you prefer a plug-in 40-mile range Volt or a 100-mile Leaf?
Without a doubt, the Leaf. The form factor for the Leaf and the basic concept of the Leaf appeals to me much more than the Volt. I have a hybrid. I don't need another gas-powered electric vehicle. I have a hybrid that I love very much. If I was going to get a second car, without a doubt, it would be something like the Leaf. The Volt wouldn't even play into it.
But if you replaced your car, you'd have to throw a third car into the mix, you would think?
I don't think the Leaf could. You know what? The Leaf could be 98% of my driving. Except when I need to go to Baltimore, you know, I need to go down, you know, for those 200-mile trips. If I'm running down to BWI to drop somebody off at the airport, you know, that 100-mile range doesn't cut it.
Get some crab cakes.
Yeah, hang out for the night, you know. Yeah. I mean, or, you know, both my wife and I love road trips, as everyone knows. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, going at 100 miles a day, you can't get very far.
Well, okay, so my wife and I drive to work in two completely opposite directions, and we each drive approximately 20 miles one way. 100-mile range would get me there and back on pure electricity. When we do occasionally take the longer drive, we drive the hybrid. Done. It's a done deal.
Well, and that brings me to, we haven't, it was one detail that GM has been very quiet about and not been publicizing much at all is the MPG after your 40 miles run out.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
I thought it was like 107. Didn't Bob say that? He said it was 107 MPG.
No, mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. It's going to be probably, what do you think, 30? Oh.
Somebody on Prius Chat did the math. I remember that. When they came out and said that the Volt had, what, I forget now, 250 miles per gallon?
11 billion, I think it was.
It was 11 billion, miles per gallon, rounded to the nearest 110 billion. Somebody said, okay, let's break this down. And everyone, you know, we all know that the EPA course is a very strict length, the same length for every vehicle. And it exceeds the 40 miles of the battery. So they sort of did the math and said, if you drove the first 40 miles on battery, assuming that it got infinite miles per gallon, then what had to be the miles per gallon for the remaining distance in order to bring it down to 250? And they came up with a number that was in the low 20s. Now, again, that it's completely speculation, and the reason it's speculation is that the only place you hear it is from somebody speculating. Like you said, Danny, GM's being very quiet about, if I have to drive 200 miles, which is easy driving here in Chicago from north side to south side and back, what's going to be my mileage for the remaining 140 miles?
Yeah, and they'll throw out the 200 miles per gallon number at you all day, but they won't answer the when it becomes a normal hybrid, what does it get?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, again, I think they grabbed this idea, they grabbed this concept, and they ran with it. Whether it made sense, whether they could actually do it or not, wasn't the issue. They had to do something, and this was something that, you know, that everybody approved of.
And, you know, I want to say, and I think we might all agree on this, but as much as, you know, I may be down on the handling of the Volt, I honestly hope that GM comes out with this car and follow it with another car. I mean, let's face it. When I look at a Gen 1 Prius now, I kind of think, that is not an attractive car. I apologize to all my Gen 1 owners, your true trailblazers, but, you know, the mileage is not as good. It'll only do 25 miles per gallon in stealth mode instead of the 40 and the 45. It's a much reduced functionality car compared to where Toyota was able to go in the next revs. So, yeah, you know, you got to start somewhere. So I hope the Volt comes to fruition, and I hope they don't, you know, bail on it. And I hope people buy it, because I hope the second generation and the third generation is much, much better.
Well, unfortunately, GM has shown time and time again that they are not necessarily willing to stick with something through multiple generations.
Now they're coming out with an H4.
It's actually going to be a Cobalt on 20-inch rims.
Oh my god!
I got dubs on my EV,
and the power steering's not going to work.
Well, yeah, no doubt.
Alrighty.
Well, I think we've beaten up on Maximum Bob and GM enough. Okay, quick poll since we're doing that. Does any of us here not want to see the Volt come out? I want to see it come out.
I definitely want to see it come out.
Yeah.
And I would love to eat half my words that it works, that it won't work. I just don't think it'll work based on GM's history and based on what they've said and the double talk. I hope it works. I hope it's huge. And I hope it pushes Toyota and Nissan and Honda that much further to produce better cars. I truly do. I don't have any faith in them.
Yeah. And I know where you're coming from.
No arguments there, huh?
Yeah, not going to get anything from me.
Okay. Well, I think that kind of wraps it up for this week.
Mr. Lutz, you're welcome to come on What Drives Us at any point and discuss with us the GM Volt.
Absolutely. You know what?
Because I'm sure he listens to this.
I'm sure his assistant plays it every Friday morning with his breakfast. Mm-hmm. And his back rub or whatever he gets in the executive suite.
As he's driving to work in his V12 Cadillac, whatever, podcasting.
I think he takes an F-16 into work.
He might.
It's the only way he can use jet fuel in thousands of gallons on a 10-mile commute.
Oh, speaking of jets real quick, I just want to bring up this one topic.
You're not going to talk about football, are you?
wrap up. not those Falcons. Not those Jets either. We did receive some bad news today about three Tesla engineers who crashed in a very unfortunate plane accident in California. And from what I understand, it was three of their top engineers that they've lost. So not only is it obviously a loss for those families and friends of the people lost, but it's also a big loss for Tesla and their engineering team.
And the EV community. I mean, right. I think the plane was registered to their chief electrical engineer, as I recall. And yeah, absolutely, send out our sympathies to the families and everyone at Tesla. It was a terrible tragedy. And
wow, yeah. That's the first I heard of it. I'm pulling it up now.
It was just this afternoon, so.
Wow.
Yeah, they actually landed in a residential area, but no one on the ground was hurt, thankfully.
Which is amazing if you've ever been to East Palo Alto.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people crammed in a small area. Okay.
Well, that's
kind of hard to crack jokes after that, Danny.
What a way to wrap the show.
Yeah, gee, thanks. I mean,
it's the last time we asked you to wrap it up.
That's not fair.
Let's make some more GM jokes real quick.
Bob Lutz walks into a bar and now.
Hey, I want to give a shout out real quick to all 117 of the What Drives Us Facebook fans.
Yes!
Facebook.com/What Drives Us.
We love
you. Become a fan.
I should say 114 since probably three of us are on the list.
Still counts.
It counts.
Yeah, it counts. And I guess actually for a shout out, I want to give a shout out to Heil Sound. My microphones come from Heil. I love Heil. Bob Heil rocks. And you should visit them at heilsound.com.
And I guess I will do a little shout out myself. The Prius Chat Shop. If you're ever looking for any Prius accessories, check out priuschat.com/shop. We've got all kinds of accessories. Your purchases go to help support the Prius Chat community. And just today, we got some 2010 mud guards in stock.
I want some.
Which we're the only place in the U.S. that you can get them from. So.
And you know what? I got to toss in a little mea culpa. Number one, totally cool. I spent some time a couple of days ago looking through the Prius Chat shop, and there's just amazingly cool stuff in there. And you know what I just figured out? I don't think I ever paid you for my light-up door panels. So how about a public mea culpa? Like, Danny, I think I owe you some money, buddy. But I got my light-up door panels from the Prius Chat shop, and I need to talk to you about some mud guards and some other stuff. So maybe I should pay you for the last thing I bought in 2009.
Yeah, you can't keep putting stuff on credit.
It's on account, Mr. Frost.
You know, I can't help it, but every time I hear you guys say mud guards, I can't help but to think of Spinal Tap singing Mud Flap.
I have to just say Spinal Tap and I laugh. I'm sorry.
I got to put that on my iPod now.
I love Spinal Tap. So definitely. It's the location, Danny, it's priuschat.com/shop.
That's it.
Okay. And very, very, I mean, you've got sun visors in there. You've got body kits, little doodads. I'm not going to sound very knowledgeable because I just went through there and all I saw was like this one little body kit that I wanted. And
we're actually about to add a couple more body kits that I think you'll drool over, Russell.
So not the big ones from Japan, are you?
Maybe.
Oh, that is so unfair because those kits really rock.
Trying to make my Prius look as much as my MR2 as I can, but I don't think it's going to work.
No? You know what? I would be so into just totally customizing mine.
But. Well, the body kit we're going to add soon actually supposedly increases the, or decreases, whichever it is, the airflow of the car, the coefficient drag. It actually does a little bit better with the Prius.
Really?
Yeah, so maybe we'll see some fuel efficiency gains. But we're going to launch a new shop soon, a brand new software and everything, so stay tuned. But in the meantime, place your order, priuschat.com/shop, and help support the community.
Very cool. Hey, Tony, thanks for coming on again this week.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me back.
It's always awesome when you're here, so believe me, hopefully we'll have you back lots.
All right. That's what she said.
And I guess... we better end this now. I guess for this week, I'm Russell Frost of the Prius Owners Group.
And I'm Danny Cooper of PriusChat.com.
And we
and
both
I'm a vagrant.
No one asked you. And we both hope you'll download us again next week to find out what drives us.